Here's something to think about. Our world has ended 5 times. To be more specific, there have been 5 mass extinction events in the history of the Earth, wiping out most animal life and reshaping the planet each time.
Our next guest wanted to know more about the cataclysmic events that have shaped our planet, and in a new book, he lays out what we know about the causes of past extinctions, the circumstances that got us here, and whether or not or when history might repeat itself in the future.
Peter Brannon joins us now. He's a science journalist and author. His new book is The Ends of the World, Volcanic Apocalypses, Lethal Oceans, and Our Quest to Understand Earth's Past Mass Extinctions. Peter, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
A lot of us might think mass extinction and think about the dinosaurs. That was one of them, but you say that's only the most recent and it overshadows the other 4, which were as big or maybe even bigger deals.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that the most recent mass extinction was the extinction of the non-bird dinosaurs, because we still have bird dinosaurs, which are birds. But there are 4 older mass extinctions than that. And, you know, in the early 80s and in the 90s, we put it together that this asteroid hit when the dinosaurs went out. And so geologists and paleontologists went back to the earlier mass extinctions to try and figure out what happened. And they didn't find the asteroid impacts. And instead what they found were sort of these extreme episodes of climate and ocean changes driven by, you know, geology itself, volcanoes and mountain building episodes. And so it's kind of a subtle story, but I think it's one that has a lot of resonance today, given the experiment we're kind of running on our ocean and climate.
We'll get into the causes in just a bit, but tell us first what makes for a mass extinction. What happens? How extreme an event is one?
Sure. So it's kind of a hazy definition, but there are 5 events we think where the majority of animal life has gone extinct in a geologically brief period of time. So less than 1 million years and probably much less. So at the most, a few tens of thousands, possibly a few thousands of years, and maybe a few centuries. We don't really know how quickly these things played out, because it's hard to really see that fine a detail in the fossil record.
And you point out that, you know, if we were able to go back and look at some of these periods, maybe before these extinctions, you know, if you transported me to this time, I would think I was on an alien planet. The really weird alien-looking creatures, different-looking landscapes, of course, different oxygen levels and stuff. I might die immediately. But these don't look like what we now think of as our planet Earth.
Oh, no, not at all. So the first mass extinction takes place at the end of the Ordovician, where you have a giant supercontinent on the South Pole, where Africa was right over the South Pole. The top of the planet was just a vast ocean, and there was no life on land whatsoever. There were no trees, there were no animals, and all the life was confined to the seas, where it was kind of this world of creepy crawlies, things that look like horseshoe crabs, and these giant squid-like things that live in these long cones. So it really was an alien world that we wouldn't recognize.
Now, you mentioned a bit about the causes behind these mass extinctions, and it seems like one very common theme, and you touched on it briefly earlier, a change in the environment, especially a change in carbon levels in the atmosphere and in the oceans.
Yeah, so the worst mass extinction of all time was this event called the End-Permian mass extinction, and there was this just unimaginable volcanic episode that erupted enough lava that it would have covered the lower 48 states in lava a kilometer deep. But scientists actually don't think it was the lava that killed life. They think it was all the volcanic gases that came up. And we know these volcanoes would have generated incredible amounts of CO2. And you can actually see proxies in the rock record that reflect that. And you can tell that it gets really, really warm. You can see the ocean starts to acidify. That's what happens when the ocean reacts with excess carbon dioxide. Ocean loses its oxygen because it gets so warm. And so it's really an extreme worst-case scenario of what can happen if you do mess with these, you know, these forces of changing the chemistry of the atmosphere and the oceans.
And do we know what portion of the world's species, animal, maybe otherwise, we lost in this particular extinction?
I mean, the highest estimates are something like 96%. So, I mean, the planet was almost completely sterilized. The fossil record goes almost completely quiet immediately and then remains really impoverished for about 10 million years. You can't really find trees for 10 million years. Coral reefs are replaced by sort of bacterial slime. It's really a bleak episode in Earth's history.
So it's almost a complete do-over for complex forms of life on the planet.
Yeah, in fact, in the 1860s, there's a natural philosopher who thought that given this sort of total reboot he saw in the fossil record, that it must have been due to a second act of divine creation, that basically the world was basically reborn completely. So it's pretty dramatic.
And about how long ago was that extinction event?
So that was 252 million years ago. It was actually almost 200 million years before the dinosaurs went extinct. So very old.
And now let's talk about the dinosaur extinction, or almost extinction, because we do still have birds, which are dinosaurs, I understand. And people had been chalking that one up to this meteor impact. Maybe people are starting to think that wasn't the whole story.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, because at the same time that, you know, the biggest asteroid impact that we know of in the last billion years on Earth, on the other side of the planet, India is kind of going crazy. You have one of the biggest volcanic events in the last few hundred million years. So for a long time, there's kind of been these two camps that have been going at it, assigning blame to whether the volcanoes or the asteroids. But there's this new interesting sort of reconciliation that at least some people are talking about, where maybe the asteroid actually instigated the worst episodes of volcanism. So it was kind of this tag team effort, because both would have been incredibly destructive in their own right. I think a lot of that theory still has a ways to go. Most people would still assign major blame to the asteroid, but it does raise eyebrows that there's this crazy volcanic event going on at the same time.
I think one question that leapt into my mind, seeing how often over, again, a 600 million year or so span, massive volcano outbreaks almost wiped out life on Earth. Is this something we're watching for happening again?
Yeah, I don't think we have to worry about that anytime in the near future. I think, you know, we talk about Yellowstone being the most dangerous volcano, and it would cover a lot of states in a few inches of ash. But these continental flood basalts, they're called, as I said, would cover the same area in miles deep of lava. So they're super rare. I don't think anyone is worried about them happening anytime soon. I think what we have to worry about is that we might be the super volcano here in this case. It's thought that these volcanoes burn through huge coal fields filled with oil and natural gas, and that might have made the mass extinction as bad as it was, the end Permian. And as one paleontologist put it to me, it doesn't matter whether carbon dioxide comes from Volvos or volcanoes. It does the exact same thing. So I think we need to, you know, take heed of what these lessons that the Earth, what the fossil record is teaching us.
Talking to Peter Brannon, his new book is The Ends of the World, Volcanic Apocalypses, Lethal Oceans, and Our Quest to Understand Earth's Past Mass Extinctions. Let's talk more about today and the future now. How does the amount of carbon we're putting out, we humans are putting up into the atmosphere, compare cumulatively to these mass extinction levels of carbon increase in the air?
So the giant volcanic event 252 million years ago that I was talking about earlier injected amount of carbon into the air that we could never hope to reproduce. It was, I think, 40,000 gigatons is the upper estimate. And if we burned all our fossil fuels, I think we'd burn something like 5,000 gigatons. So these are really extreme. But the frightening thing is that for things like ocean acidification, which is just what it sounds like, the ocean gets acidic when you add excess carbon dioxide to it, it's the rate and not the volume that matters. So as far as we can tell, we are injecting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere and oceans at 10 times the rate of the end Permian. So that's kind of frightening.
Why is the rate important? Does that affect the oceans and ocean life's ability to absorb that carbon?
Yeah, it's just kind of basic chemistry. The ocean or the planet has these ways of washing out excess CO2 out of the atmosphere, but they take place on very long timescales. So rock weathering, which is basically just wearing down mountains and land masses, is one of the most effective ways of pulling CO2 out of the air. And it gets deposited as limestone in the ocean, but that will take 100,000 years at the least. And we're just injecting it into the system too fast, really, for it to respond. So, you know, the pH is plummeting and animals that calcify are having trouble building their shells and skeletons. And so that could have some big effects on the food web in the near future.
Yeah, what's the ultimate follow-on effect if we have this unchecked acidification in the oceans because of all the carbon we're putting out there?
So we're already kind of seeing it in, at least in the Southern Ocean around Antarctica and the Pacific Northwest. There are these small planktonic snails that are a really vital part of the food web, and they build these really thin, translucent shells. And NOAA, the National Oceanographic and I actually forget what that acronym stands for.
Atmospheric Administration,
Yeah, that's right. They've been on research cruises in the Antarctic and Pacific Northwest, and they've pulled up these snails, and they have holes pitted in their shells. And by, you know, as soon as mid-century, they're not going to be able to live in these environments, and there might be some big knock-on effects in the food web. So we don't really know. Coral reefs also will be affected by this, so I mean, if we just go business as usual, things get pretty bleak by the end of the century. So we really have a chance in the next few decades to make some important decisions about really life on Earth, I guess.
And you haven't mentioned ocean levels yet. In these past events, because of these massive climate changes related to carbon levels, the Earth looked very different in part because of much, much higher ocean levels. Isn't that right?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of Earth's history, there was no ice on the planet whatsoever. So at least a few of these mass extinctions take place where there's no ice. So if it gets really warm, sea level will go up because water expands, but there weren't really these. I think it's still kind of hazy what role sea level played in these extinctions.
So looking at this massive span of time, do you think that's part of why it's hard to confront the problem of climate change, to look at these vast processes that can go over tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, and then see other changes that might be happening in the course of one or two human generations?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I think it's kind of a reflection of our culture a little bit, that you know, we're so wrapped up in these like news cycles and election cycles that we might not realize that the decisions we make in the next few decades really will extend into geological time. A lot of geology makes you kind of feel small in the big picture just because time is so deep and we are such a brief period in it. But in other ways, we really could end up being an important geological force that a geologist 100 million years in the future could actually see what we did in the rock record. And it all depends on really how we act as a civilization in the next few decades. So we have a lot of responsibility.
Peter, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
We've been talking to science journalist and author Peter Brannon. His new book is called The Ends of the World, Volcanic Apocalypses, Lethal Oceans, and Our Quest to Understand Earth's Past Mass Extinctions.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk about women and the White House and why there seem to be so few women in top roles. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farrett. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.